What is going on, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I am your host, Curry Blanford. I don't know that I've ever said that before, but it seems appropriate if there's new people out here. I'm Curry, the host of this podcast. And so this weekend, if you follow me on Instagram, you saw that I was at a adoption conference on Saturday called CAFA. It was an amazing conference. It was a ton of fun. And those conferences are awesome to sort of meet people. But my favorite part of like adoption, any conference really, is talking to other vendors, other booths. And so at this CAFA conference, I got to talk to my good friends, Ryan and Tamika. And it reminded me of this interview. We've done it. We did it maybe a month ago or whatever. But I just got to like remember this interview and how much I loved it. They are incredible people. Tamika is this amazing braider. She does these hairstyles, but they have stepped in a place that I think most people outside of the adoption world and inside the adoption world don't know there's an issue. And the issue is that there are a lot of Caucasian families who adopt children, African and African-American children. And because of that, Caucasian parents do not know how to care for their children's skin and hair. And so this can become really shameful to a lot of adoptive and foster parents who want to take care of their kids, who love their kids, but are not equipped with the skills to do so. And that's where Tamika and Ryan's organization has stepped in. That's what they do. They will do hair care. They'll, you know, teach braiding. And so they have now set up this brick and mortar in Oak Park, Illinois, and they have people coming from all around to get their children's hair done. It's awesome. The thing about it is, though, and I think this is the most important part of what they do, is all of this speaks to a larger issue in our society, which is these boundaries that we have around race. And so there's a lot of shame from Caucasian parents because they can't take care of and don't know how. And Tamika and Ryan have stepped into this awkward space that's sort of in the middle where we can have conversations about race in a really healthy way, and that we can build up these children who need to be built up because they need care. And we're all doing this in a loving way. We're all doing this together, equipping these parents to care for their children. I think it's so beautiful. It's such this interview. I'm so pumped about it. I cannot wait for you to hear it. They are amazing people. The work that they're doing is amazing. And I just think you feel the genuine love of God when they speak, when you hear from them, and you're going to love it. I can't wait for you to hear about them. So this would be a good episode to maybe share with your friends. I know there are a lot of adoptive and foster families out there, a lot of people that listen to this podcast who are in that world. They need to know about resources like this. Tamika and Ryan not only help out, you know, in Illinois and in the surrounding areas, but they can be a help across the country in helping set up this network of barbershops and salons. So obviously I'm fired up. I'm going to go ahead and stop talking now and let you listen to them. But I do have to remind you, if you think about it, will you just go ahead and rate and review me in whatever podcast platform you're listening to me on? It super helps. It lets people know the Theology of Hustle's out there and that it's legit and not crazy. So always helpful to me. Make sure you're following me on Instagram at Theology of Hustle, and I hope you enjoy this interview with Tamika. Well, Ryan, Tamika, thanks so much for having me into your place and, you know, letting me interview you. It's awesome.
Yeah, we're excited.
Okay, so let's just jump off and just have you sort of like introduce yourself to everybody.
Okay. I'm Tamika Swint, and I'm the executive director of Styles for Kids. And we are doing this exciting interview here at our new location in Oak Park at 20 Lake Street. So I want to do a quick promotion of that.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's such a cool place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm Ryan Swint, husband to Tamika Swint, also just a board member for Styles for Kids.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So I got to know some of the history. Like, how did
the two of you sort of come together? How did all that go down, sort of?
Well, it's an interesting story. I was over at my parents' house, actually doing a video for my grandmother. And basically, I was getting set ready to go back home. And when I was walking out to the door, they were right behind me talking. It's like, well, you need to tell them. No, you need to tell them. So they're just chatting behind themselves. So I'm like, okay, what do you need to tell me? They're like, we have a girl that you want to meet.
Okay.
So I'm just like thinking in my head, like, oh, Lord. And it's like, she's like, she is really nice. She's got a really great personality and all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, yeah. It's like, you know, we want you guys to go out on a date, and it's like, we'll come with you and all that stuff. And if you don't like her, then, like I said, you just leave off there. So I was like, I gave a slow yes. So I was just like, all right. So.
Yeah. And my side of that is that I've been doing Ryan's stepmother's hair for almost 2 years. And actually, it's interesting because I think I met his whole family and never met him in that whole entire time.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So the same thing happened with me. One day I was doing her hair and my now father-in-law came in the room and they're like, we want to talk to you about something, you know, and I'm like, what is it? And they're like, well, we want to introduce you to our son. And I was like, what does he look like? So they showed me a picture, you know, not to over spiritualize it, but you know, they told me they wanted to invite us out, you know, for dinner and, you know, just whatever happened, happened. So, and when I saw him, I was like, oh, he's cute. So I was interested in getting to know him better.
Okay. That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So, so do you mind talking to me a little bit just about how did you get started doing hair and all of that stuff?
Yes. What was your... So, hair has always been a passion of mine. I have 5 older brothers, and when I was growing up, they all had afros. So I loved playing in their hair. That's my earliest memory of doing hair. I remember one of my brothers used to let me braid his hair. And he would actually wear it outside, but it did not look good. So that was when I figured out I really had a passion for it, I think. Yeah. And over the years, I just kept doing it. And when I went into college, some of my friends, they were like, you're crazy. Like, you're going to drive all the way back to Chicago, you know, twice a week for class. And I was like, well, you do what you have to do.
Yeah, right.
So I was in school down in Champaign, Urbana.
Oh, okay.
And I would drive back twice a week along with a full-time class load. Yes.
That's like a 3-hour drive.
To go to hair
drive,
class.
Right?
Yes. It's about 2 hours.
Is it? Okay.
And then I would drive back the next morning for class. And so I did that for a whole like 2 semesters.
Gosh.
And my college roommate, she was like, you're crazy. I would not do that. You're going to mess around and mess up in your classes and all this. And I said, girl, in a minute, you're going to be coming to me to get your hair done. And it's so funny because that's what actually happened.
Oh, like,
I started doing her hair. And before I knew it, people were calling me all over the campus.
Really?
Yeah. So that's how I started. And then after college, you know, it was something that I was doing just to make, you know, some extra money while I was in school.
Right.
And then so now I'm starting my career. So I really didn't think about, you know, doing hair outside of that. I was focused on my career.
Right.
So in the process of unfolding over the years, I discovered that was something I still had a knack for, you know, and so I just kept continuing to do it kind of on the side, but it wasn't my main thing.
Right. Right. Okay. So how does that transition into Styles for Kids? Can you talk a little bit just how like y'all came up with all that?
Absolutely. So I was on a mission trip unwillingly. Yeah.
Okay. I like those unwilling missions.
Exactly.
Trips.
Yeah. But you know, I just really felt like I was supposed to go, you know, and I've been praying about it and I had peace. Huh. So I said, okay. So I went And they asked all of us to teach a class during the time that we were there. We were teaching English to some students in Poland.
In Poland, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And as part of my church, that was the mission. And we were using the Bible as the text to okay. teach English.
Okay.
And so they said, well, all of you need to come up with a class to teach the students on free time or whatever. And I'm like, oh boy. So I said, well, I know how to do hair, so I'll teach hair braiding.
Yeah.
And all the girls are really excited. They all came, which was very interesting to me. And one of the young ladies, she really was very, very studious, and she paid attention very well. And before I knew it, she was braiding everybody's hair.
And that's
it
awesome.
Looked so beautiful. So that was when I was like, okay, maybe there's something here, but I don't know quite what it is.
Yeah.
So I came home, and then I felt led to go back again.
Back to Poland?
Okay. The next summer. Or it might have been two summers after that. And so it was on the second trip where I said, okay, Lord, I really need to hear from you. Like, what is this? You know? And so that was when I really heard kids and hair. And I said, well, I'll just go back and start doing kids' hair and just see what happened, you know?
Yeah.
And so I came home, and when I got off of work, I mean, I was single, so, you know, I had a lot of free time after okay. work, you know? So I yeah. said, well, I'll just hand out some cards and just see what happens. And I mean, it just naturally unfolded, you know?
Yeah.
So I started with my goddaughter, and then from her, I got lots of referrals. And then one day I was sitting in church, and there was this lady in front of me, and she had her daughter's hair was beautifully braided. Okay, because I'm always looking at people's
hair.
I'm
sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
And so I just really felt a prompting from the Holy Spirit, like, you know, give her your card. And I was like, she doesn't need my card. Her daughter's hair is beautifully right. braided. What does she need me for? And I just said, well, whatever. You know, and I fanned it off, and I just really felt strongly that I should. And so I tapped the lady on the shoulder, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, you don't even look like you need this, but I just really felt led that I'm supposed to give you my card. And she's like, she looked at it and she said, oh girl, she said, I don't need your help, but I know somebody that does. She said, and a matter of fact, she's gonna call you on Monday morning because I'm tired of her coming to me. And I said, okay. So on Monday, Mary called, okay. and Mary had adopted two African-American girls, and she was really struggling. And she said, I need you to come over today. Can you come over today? It's like, I guess. So I went over and I helped Mary, and Styles for Kids naturally unfolded from there because I helped her, and then she knew a lot of people that needed help.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, it was just like, okay, everybody's calling me. I need help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as Styles for Kids was coming along, Ryan, how did, like, when did y'all sort of meet in all of that sort of?
So basically I met her, like I said, we started together around 2010.
Okay.
So that's when she got the idea, because she had told me about it, saying, hey, I would like to start this as a nonprofit, because she's been doing it, you know, doing all these kids right. for a while, and just felt like, you know, this was the right time. So, you know, me coming into it, you know, I saw her website and, you know, saw her business card. I was like, well, that's a great idea. You know, I mean, I can help you out, you know, because my background is in graphic design.
Ah, so. Nice. Okay.
So, you know, I said, like, well, I can, you know, try to redo your website, you know, get it up there, and then, you know, do your business cards and do your marketing, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that kind of unfolded there, you know, redoing her site and then, you know, doing all, you know, all the cards, business cards, and doing brochures for her. So, you know, that kind of just tied in and made us gel together.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, that's one of those things, like, no one sees your organization unless, like, it's got a good website, right?
Exactly.
I mean, like you're meeting the exact need that
absolutely
that Tamika has. That's amazing.
At
that's
the really right cool. time, because yeah. we were just, it was becoming an organization, and we really needed,
yeah,
you know, to establish ourselves, you know, as a company, yeah. You know, and so he came along like right at the right time.
That's amazing.
So,
and you know, you got married out of all of it.
Yeah.
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 Right. Yeah.
It's yeah. amazing. What I got an amazing husband. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. But you've been on this wild ride basically from the beginning.
Man. Yes.
Yeah. Starting this whole. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So let's talk about what you do, because I think you meet a need that most of the public has no idea is even a need.
Yes.
So can you talk absolutely. A little bit about the yes. need and all that?
Absolutely. And, you know, as I've expressed, even just some of the workshops that we've done with adoption agencies, yeah. some of the things that I hear from parents is that they feel incapable and they feel like they don't know enough. And they feel judged, yeah. you know, because they don't understand the hair. But it's such an important part of their children and how they feel about themselves when they're in public.
Yeah.
And there's, I think, a secret suffering kind of that takes place on the inside of an adoptive parent because the dynamics of your family is already different.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so you're dealing with some of the racial issues, even just surrounding, you know, I've heard, you know, African-American families answering, well, why are they adopting our, you know,
right.
so there's
yeah.
a lot of judging. There's a lot of feelings, you know, that are in the air. And so because of that, and then you have the hair not looking groomed
right.
and it's no bearing on the love that the parent has for the child.
Right.
That I just felt an extreme burden, you know, to help. And, part of me, I think, even just was infuriated by the fact that here we are judging a community of people that we don't even know, you yeah. know, like as an African Americans, yeah. instead of figuring out what can I do to get involved, to help, you know, and to do something about this, you know, so these families yeah. feel supported,
right.
you know, in what they're doing. And so that's where really Styles for Kids was birthed from, was a genuine desire based upon a need. And I just admire Mary so much. Like, she's really the driving force behind this because, you know, I don't think she realized it, but she really opened up the opportunity for us to have a transparent conversation. Like, you know, and she just honestly answered, you know, whatever I asked her.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
as she answered those questions and then she introduced me to other people who can answer those questions transparently, you know, I said, okay, this is a genuine need and this is how we can help and make it specific to meet the needs of the families based upon what the need was
yeah.
and not just what we thought they needed, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, making me tear up a little bit.
Yeah.
Mean, that's awesome.
Yes.
Because there is like a real cultural piece to all this.
Yes.
Like on the,
yes.
like simmering underneath.
Absolutely. It is. And even because of the history of African Americans in this country.
Right.
And I understand from both perspectives now, you know, and so it's, but the beauty in this is that children are being raised in homes with parents that genuinely love them.
Right.
And that is the part that is most important. And yeah. they need support.
Yeah.
That is what Styles for Kids wants to do. You know, and we're not here to judge. And I say this at every workshop. And I think everybody appreciates this. It's like, there's no dumb question. Whatever question you have, it's not dumb. It's not stupid. You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, just be open, you know, whatever question you have, just ask it, you know, and I'm not going to be offended, you know, no yeah. one's going to be offended. Yeah. You know, we need you to get your questions answered.
Right.
And that's what these workshops are for. You know, that's why we exist. And that's why we are looking for even other African-American families that can come alongside and support and say, I want to help. I want to be that person, you know,
yeah.
an adoptive parent can call, you know, and be a resource for them, you know? So yeah, we want to do that. We want to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's a huge gap there, you know, and it's just because, you know, we normally hang out with people who look like us, yes. you know?
Yeah. Yes. Basically just trying to make them comfortable. Like yes. I said, when they feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Because there is that piece of like feeling judged about all this stuff, right? Like, you, all I want to do is take care of my kids to the best of my ability. And
absolutely.
If I don't know how,
Absolutely.
No one's teaching me, right?
Absolutely. Like,
yeah.
One mom shared with me yesterday that she was in the airport, and she said it was an African-American mom. She kept staring at her. And then she said, well, then I guess finally she felt like she should come up to me and say something because my daughter's hair wasn't looking right or whatever. And so she said she came up to me and she said it was very awkward. She was just like, well, I have these products and I think you need to use these products. And she said it was like she even introduced herself. You know, like it was very weird. It's very awkward. And then she said, and then I just felt judged because it was like, well, you didn't even try to ask like about me or my daughter or, you know, you wouldn't even try to get to know us. You just came up to me and started talking about products.
Right.
So I think just being also a resource for anyone who might want to say something and get involved. You know, we can be kind of like the buffer, you know?
Yeah, there's so many things. Because I think what you do is like super important.
Yes.
You really do. And it's like such a need in the adoptive and foster care community. It's beautiful. But there's this piece to it too, where it's not just the like look of the braids, right? Like the barbershop for the African-American community is sort of this like cultural piece where like the culture's given and shown and you know there's a practice to all this, right? And so a lot I feel maybe I don't know as
no that's
as you,
good
but,
yeah
but I'm a lot of the kids who were adopted into these families have a huge identity crisis.
Yes.
Because they're like, I don't understand the African-American community, I don't look like the white community, so where
do I fit in?
Right.
And we actually did an interview with a transracial adoptee who spoke very transparently about that. We're going to be putting it on our YouTube page within the next month or so.
Okay.
And we interview both the male and females from the different perspectives. But that's true. It's very important. And again, you want to teach your children life skills.
Right.
And that may require some parents to put themselves in a situation where they feel uncomfortable.
Right.
And realistically, it happens a lot for African Americans, you know. So you want to set your children up so that when they are living in the world as an African American person, they can do that and feel confident. And one of the ways to do that is by intentionally placing yourself in an environment with other African Americans. It's the only way to accomplish that, you know, so that they feel like they can identify with. And barbershop is a good place to do that.
Yeah.
There's some conflict about whether or not you should drop the child off or you should stay with. I think you do whatever works for your family.
Yeah.
Okay. And that could depend on the child also.
Yeah, right.
And then you want to listen to your child. They want you there, then you should stay, obviously,
right,
you know?
Right.
So, but it's a culture within even the barbershop, just understanding the language and, you know, just how we communicate with one another, you know, that would make, you know, your child maybe feel more comfortable in a situation with other African Americans, you know, because they're going to be in different places, you know, work world or social areas where they'll be interacting with other African Americans culturally. So you want to be able to give them that experience. I think it's very important. I think it's you're doing your child a disservice if you don't. Yeah,
I totally agree. And it's it's a huge we talk about that a lot in the adoptive foster care community, but it's also super intimidating for somebody who's Caucasian to like just show up at any old barber shop, right? And be like, hey, here I am. So like you're bridging that gap.
Exactly. And we want to be a resource where we're actually reaching out to barbershops and beauty salons and creating that community of people that understand, well, this is the nature of what we're doing. And this is how you can support too.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that we open up this location is because we also, for a long time, we've been doing hair in home, but we wanted to be able to give our clients a salon experience because you're going to be in the world going to a salon, you know, as an adult, you know. Yeah. So that is just the nature of how we do, you know. And so what I love, and even as I see it happening here, is that we have African-American families that are coming here too.
Yeah.
So now we're beginning to see some of the relationships being formed, which is the other reason why we wanted to create this, so that people have an opportunity to interact, you know, right. with other African-Americans yeah. and see how it goes in the salon, you know, yeah. so that maybe it will just be a precursor even to, you know, when they become an adult, they feel more comfortable in that environment. Yeah. It's important.
Yeah.
And so I think that was something that was drawn to my attention by a beauty salon owner when I first started Styles for Kids. She said, now they need to come to the shop too. And I said, you know what? You're absolutely right.
I think that's a really yeah. good word. And to take this to like a bigger level, right? I mean, the church is so racially divided still, I think,
yeah.
you know, in general.
Right. Right?
There are churches that do it well. Yeah. But I feel like the adoptive and foster care community and what you're doing can be a bridge for the church to like start breaking down some of those barriers, right? Mm. I mean, you know, I know that's grandiose and
yeah.
but it has to start somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
It does.
Absolutely. It does.
And what a better place than around children.
Yeah.
Right? We can all get on board that like children need safe and happy homes.
Absolutely. Yes.
So
yeah.
Why not?
Exactly. Right? Mm-hmm. That is one thing. I'm trying to remember the name of the conference that I attended. But it was an adoption conference I attended at a church. And one of the things they were saying is that there is such a need in regards to fostering and adoption of even not just African-American kids, but kids in general who are just in a bad situation. Whereas that we as believers would be willing to take just one.
Yeah.
We could have a huge impact.
Yeah.
You know, and that is what the church should be doing. That is being the hands and feet of Christ, is coming alongside these children in love and showing them the love of Christ. Yeah. And as we do that, we're really creating impact, not just for our generation, but generations to come. You know,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's important that we as believers really wrap our arms around this mission to be foster and adoptive parents.
Amen. Amen. I yes. totally agree with that. That's awesome. Yes. I love it.
And so let's talk a little bit about conferences though, because you yeah. know, that's where we met
yes.
right? At Refresh, and then the conference up at Compass where we were just kind of mm-hmm. hanging out next to each other. Right. Let's talk about the hustle though of mm-hmm. starting an organization. Like mm-hmm. what is that like for mm-hmm. y'all?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. But no, it's, like I said, it's a challenge. You know, you get frustrated and you get, you know, weary and things like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, just, you know, the passion and the drive that you have for, you know, what you do
yeah.
is what should motivate you and just keep you going.
Yeah.
And I know just not just from her doing it, but just, you know, as me as a designer, you know, just, you know, seeing the passion and the love that you have. And as she said, she's had this ever since she was little. Same thing for me. I've had it ever since I was little too. It's like, that's what's going to keep you going. You
yeah.
know, when you're like, well, I'll give up. Because, mm-hmm. right. you know, there's been times, like I said, when you want to just like quit, stuff like that. But, you know, that's something in the back of your mind just saying, no, just keep going. It's going mm-hmm. to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
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 And Ryan's a huge encourager. Because there's been some times I'm like, oh, I'm just done. And he's just like, well, no.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think having the right support.
Yeah.
You know, is very important. And the board, which he's on the board, but
yeah.
The board of directors has been very, very helpful in keeping us going. Not only just in coming up with ideas to keep it going, but the financial support, because you can't do anything without money.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
So and that was something I was thinking about, even just us being here,
right,
and how instrumental they were in making that happen. Mm. And so you need people, you need the support of people. I think that's, you got to have a community.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's something I even see just in the adoption and foster care. You right. got to yeah. have a community.
Yeah.
It's totally important. True.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
So what about conferences and stuff? I mean, how do y'all enjoy doing that sort
oh,
of stuff?
Oh, man, or? It's so much fun.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, it's a lot of interesting, because just seeing the different people come yeah. in mm-hmm. and, you know, And as she said, you know, they're like so weary of asking you questions and
yeah.
like, trying not to feel like they're stupid or nothing like mm-hmm. that. But, you know, just telling them, it's like, just ask away, you know,
yes.
ask whatever you want to, mm-hmm. whether if you think you know it or you don't know it, you know, or you just want more clarification. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just seeing the impact, you know, when they're happy afterwards, it's like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
you know, right. yeah. after that. So that's been really fun, fun yes. to see that.
Yeah, because you're freeing them for something that they've been struggling with for a long time.
Yeah.
Like you get to step in at the cool part.
Yes, exactly. There's help. Yeah. There's hope.
I can help you.
Yes,
I do.
Yeah.
No, that's totally true.
Yeah.
It is. And y'all get to do a lot of that stuff together, which is which is rare, I think.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. Usually it's somebody has a passion and then, you know, the other person is making the money to make the passion happen. Or
that's
but
it.
To, like, get to go to conferences together.
And, yes. Yeah. It is a blessing. And something else that I will add to that too is that about the conferences, something that just came to me is the genuine need, not just here.
Yeah.
It's all over. And I'm really becoming more passionate about how can we extend a helping hand even beyond Illinois, because yeah. there's a genuine need
right.
all over the place.
Yeah.
And I even had one of the stylists that just started. She said, I was in California and Tamika's a need in California.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all over the place. We have, and I was just telling you, we're having people drive in here now from Iowa, and we've had Wisconsin and Indiana. So I'm passionate about how can we help those families. And, you know, some people would minimize and say, well, it's just a couple of families. Well, even if it's a couple of families, they still need help.
Yeah. Right. Amen. Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
so I think the conferences are bringing the more reality to us that the need is greater than what we thought it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, 'cause you could literally go to any city in the United States and mm-hmm. you could fill up all of your stylists at any given time, I think, you know,
absolutely.
We're out in DuPage County with Refresh and we have like a small, or with Replanted, we have mm-hmm. a small portion and
yes.
there's 70 families in that organization that have mm-hmm. kids who are African or African American,
yes.
right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's just,
yeah,
it is.
It's
the need is great.
Yes.
Yeah. And we talk about it a lot. I think what's interesting though, and sadly, you two are some of the few African-Americans at a lot of these conferences, right? I mean,
yes. yes.
Yeah. And but I think that brings even more clarity to like how important like what y'all do is, mm-hmm. you know?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's just one of those, because if you're missing that cultural piece with your mm-hmm. kids and like, and you know, we've talked about this.
Yes.
But
we don't tire about it's talking about sad. It because I think the more that we talk about it, it sets people free.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it's in the not talking about it that, yeah. which is why it's so important that you're doing this, that, you know, the help doesn't come,
right?
You know,
yeah.
and the genuine awareness yeah. of what's going on doesn't come.
Right.
And, you know, there still may be some that might be struggling, but as we continue the conversation, you know, we get those aha moments along the way. Aha, you know, maybe they can hear differently from Ryan than they can hear from me.
Yeah.
You know, that might be that aha moment for
yeah.
them, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I was at a conference when we started this whole adoption journey, and mm-hmm. We were hearing from an African-American guy who had never, you know, had grown up in a white family, but had never been to a barbershop. And he was mm-hmm. recounting his first experience in his 20s mm-hmm. going to a barbershop. And he just sat out in the parking lot for like hours, like mm-hmm. trying to get the courage up to like mm-hmm. actually go in, you know,
yeah,
and this
absolutely.
Is something that your regular African-American man, I mean, mm-hmm. gets lined up mm-hmm. pretty regularly.
Yeah, right? every week or two
yeah.
weeks.
Yeah, every week or two, yeah.
It's a part of like the regular culture. You
absolutely.
Know, I go to the barbershop every couple months and it shows, but
yes.
you know, like it's just different.
And I even think that it's more about the culture
yeah.
than it is just getting your hair done.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a certain right. connection that takes place between the men in the yeah. barbershop when you're right. talking about sports or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly yeah. that. And so then you're going to place your son who's never been to a barbershop in a community of people that is just like, it's foreign.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I would compare that experience to, you know, I grew up in Chicago. So yeah. most of the schools that I've gone to have been all African American.
Sure.
Until I went to college, it was like cultural shock. It's like, oh my gosh, where are the African American people? I am truly the minority here, you know? Yeah. So just removing that awkwardness, you know?
Yeah.
And in some ways, you know, my family could not help you where I grew up, you know, but placing your child in those environments so that when they get into that environment, they're not completely foreign. I'm telling you, that was a huge thing for me. It took it took over a year, you know, for me to try to get adjusted to just being somewhere new, you know, in a new culture.
Yeah.
And so, but how awkward is that when it's your own culture?
You know,
so you really want to, again, we promote life skills. Always think, when you're thinking about what is the best decision for your child, think, is this going to give them the best life skills? One seemingly small thing, but it's not, is covering the hair while you sleep. It's a big question we get from a lot of parents.
Yeah.
Is, well, they don't want to wear it, or should I make them wear hair coverings, or maybe we could just use the pillow? Well, the life skill is that they're going to wear something on their head when they go to sleep. And I always use the example that Ryan, Benjamin, our 4-year-old, and I, we all wear something on our head when we go to sleep.
There you go.
So those are life skills that we understand. In order to properly care for our hair, we have to keep it covered at night.
Right.
And so I understand there are other issues that go into that also. But the life skill is that you want to get your child used to wearing something on their hair when they go to sleep at night. Now, you might want to wear something on your head for a while to get them more comfortable with it. Do what you have to do, you know, but that's just a small example of something that comes up a lot that we hear. But it's like, well, the cultural thing is, well, African-Americans pretty much wear something over their head. I mean, like, that's just a given thing, you know?
Right,
so
right.
It's not unusual. It might be unusual for them because you're not doing it,
right,
you know? So,
right.
But, you know, we don't get Benjamin, you know, saying, it's just what we do, you know?
He's grown up like that.
It's just what I do. So,
well, I think that's a great topic. Can we can we talk about some of the like finer details of what
you're
teaching? Because is there hair and skincare that y'all talk about?
Okay. We do talk about both.
So what are some of the things that you talk to families about?
Well, the first thing is that what you do with your hair, you should do with your skin.
Okay.
So the hair needs to be moisturized. So does the skin.
Okay.
You know, the only real difference between Caucasian skin and African-American skin is the amount of melanin that's in the skin.
Right.
And so, which causes the color, okay? But, and it's more prone to scarring. So you want to be careful, you know, there's certain things you want to try to make sure that you're taking care of the skin. But the most important thing is moisturize.
Okay.
There, you can never put too much moisture, Because I think that's the first thing that we learn about our families is that they're not applying enough moisture.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Texas, so I played football. And in the locker room, all the African-American guys, man, all had a huge bottle of lotion, right? Like, I mean,
and
it was
like,
awesome.
And they're like slathered
in them. I don't think I've ever used lotion in my life. It's not like a, it was amazing, the differences. Yes.
Because then the skin will be dry, and then, you know, just another African-American family was saying, we're like, well, they're not caring for the child because they're not applying something to the skin. But it's not that. It's just, you know, they don't know. So it's very important to make sure you're moisturizing regularly, every day, every time there's a bath, you know, every time the hair is washed. The hair should not be washed more than once a week.
Really? Okay.
Yes. African-American hair is naturally dry and it needs moisture, not removing of the oils. We need to keep the oils in so the hair is not too dry. And so that's the first thing we learn about our families is most of them are not moisturizing properly, and which is why the reason why the hair looks ungrown, because it's not enough moisture.
Okay.
I remember during the filming that we just did for Windy City Live, we were doing a lesson as part of that filming, and the mom, she was like, oh my gosh, that just seems like a lot of product. And I'm like, she's like, I'm not using it. Not using enough. Exactly. Yeah, so that's the main thing we teach in the class is moisturizing.
So
what about, I mean, just like daily care and stuff? I mean, I have no idea, you know, like,
I don't know what it takes, yeah. You know, in general.
We're head covering. That's okay, important. Right.
So what does a head covering do, hair covering over?
It maintains moisture. So it locks the oils in the hair. Yeah. And when the hair is exposed overnight, so then it's dryness. It's
okay.
The oils are sinking into the pillow and yes, whatever so, else.
Yeah, so you'd be seeing a lot of sweat. It's like, say, because sometimes you can't sweat a lot and all that stuff just comes out of your hair.
Yeah.
Onto your pillows and onto stuff. Your and pillow. Sheets and
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah. Okay. And then protects, it's a protection, right? Like he was just saying, for the pillows and everything. But most importantly is to keep the oils in.
Right.
And to keep the scalp and the hair from being dry
yeah.
at night. And the other thing is moisturize every day, especially when the hair is left loose, because when the air hits it, dry.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Immediate dryness.
Yeah.
So it's very, very important. Like Ryan has locks. So locked hair is easier to stay moisturized because of the nature of the tight coils or whatever.
Right.
And once the oils get in there, they kind of stay. But when the hair is loose, those strands that are just loose are exposed to the air and the moisture, it just absorbs everything out of the hair. So you want to make sure that you're covering it at night, moisturizing it every day, and keeping it in a protective style as much as possible. So that would be braids or
right.
like
okay.
locks that's considered a protective okay. style or ponytails. Or with boys, you just want to make sure they're wearing something at night and then you're moisturizing and combing through it every day.
Well, because I was going to ask, like an afro, mm-hmm. I mean, is that just like dry? That dries out super quick, right?
It does.
Because
it's all it does.
So it's very difficult to keep something like that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Like my four-year-old, he has, you know, natural hair and it's like in a little afro. And I mean, I have to dump,
really?
literally dump product on it every day just to keep it looking moisturized,
yeah.
you know? So,
yeah.
And people say, well, how much? Well, you'll learn, you know, as you're doing it, right. how much, but at least a quarter size amount at the very least.
Right. Okay.
Is if you were to put a quarter size amount in the yeah. hand and apply it to the hair, that is the least amount that you should be
okay.
using. Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. I that makes sense. I've seen kids with like huge like flat tops or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like that takes a lot of work to even just maintain it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Okay. It's a lot of work.
So that's why braiding is sort of an art.
It is.
Right?
And it's a protective way to protect the hair because it locks in the moisture.
Yeah. Okay.
And so then you don't have to necessarily moisturize every day. You know,
yeah.
you can do every other day depending on, you know, your child and how okay. dry the hair is looking or if you're swimming or whatever. It's just a better protective style, which is why we use that a lot for girls, especially who have longer locks of hair,
sure.
you know, or
sure.
even shorter locks of hair, but the texture is really dry.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, braiding is like, so like, that's sort of how you do a lot of braiding.
Yes,
right?
we do.
You do a lot of braiding. Right?
we do.
So can you talk a little bit just mm-hmm. about braiding and like the different types? And
yeah. So you have individual braids, you have cornrows, you have twists, you have all the different styles that you can do of cornrows. And I think cornrows is probably what we do the most and
okay.
the most often, although individual braids become more popular with girls as they get older.
Okay.
With some of the smaller boys, we do a lot of cornrowing too, especially if the parent doesn't want to have the hair cut too early.
Yeah.
And sometimes boys have a lot of hair in the beginning. So then, you know, instead of having the hair loose, we'll braid boys too. And
okay.
that's okay. That's
yeah.
that's culturally acceptable.
Okay.
You even have some adults wearing braids because Allen Iverson, you know,
yeah,
one
right.
of the,
oh, he's famous
yeah.
for the braids, right?
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's
for
a
sure.
culturally acceptable style,
yeah.
you know, for male or female. But yeah, we do a lot of braids. Braids is okay in any style or for any texture of hair that you want to do it in.
Okay.
It's acceptable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So if you're braiding, good job.
but, I mean,
with kids, it's
yeah,
easier.
Yeah.
yeah.
But like the average person can't just like kind of show up and braid.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, which is right. why we do classes.
Yeah.
And we're going to be offering more classes now that we have this location.
Okay.
So please stay tuned to our website and Facebook pages. We'll be letting you know.
Yeah.
And then we're in partnership with a lot of adoption agencies where we do teach classes. In addition to that, we also have our one-on-one lessons that we'll do.
Yeah.
We had one mom we worked with over the period of about a year where we did classes.
Okay.
And I mean, her braiding is so good now.
Really?
Yes. Like, okay. She was really determined. I mean, she's a stay-at-home mom, so she has more time to practice. But we can generally take a person that doesn't know how to braid, and we can teach them how to braid.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Yes, okay. Anyone.
I love it. I think that's cool.
Dads, too.
It's funny because
our youngest is adopted.
Okay.
We just kind of assumed possibly African American, you know, as part of the like whole thing.
Yeah.
And he could not look more like us. Like, oh, everybody
that's
literally
beautiful. Yeah.
So it's the funniest thing, though, because we're like, oh, he's, you know, we had planned on like taking classes, mm-hmm. and like getting good at all.
You know,
like,
mm-hmm. all this stuff to do. And then he's just like,
well. Yeah. You know, it's like, and it's just, okay, because we have one family where they chose to just, you know, cut the hair off. You know, so they don't have to deal with it. And I mean, that's okay.
Yeah.
But again, life skills.
Right.
You know, so what's culturally acceptable is, okay, I'm gonna cut it off. But at some point, you want to give that child the experience of going to an African-American barbershop and experiencing that and getting a line. That is what's popular. You know, that is what's in. That is what's hot, you know. And so you want to give them that experience. I'm not against that because we know that it requires some financial investment to take your child to the, but what I'm saying is, you know, every 3 months or, you know, whatever you can afford, just make the decision to intentionally place yourself in that environment so they can have that experience. That's our recommendation.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. Do you have people that you work with sort of in the area that you send people to?
Yeah, we do. So we do have certain barbers that are in our network and who understand that you're working with children. So it's a little different. And then we do have a barber on staff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if somebody wanted to find out about some of those things, they could just contact you and you could get them hooked up and all that.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to leave all the contact information in the podcast notes.
So okay, people wonderful. Can find you. Absolutely.
I assume a lot of adopted.
And even if they aren't here,
yeah.
So if they're in another state and they need assistance with that, we can help with that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
And again, it may require you, it's a sacrifice, right?
Yeah, right.
That's something that I've been studying lately is that sometimes love requires a sacrifice.
Right.
And so if you love, then that means that I may have to drive 45 minutes or an hour to intentionally place myself in an environment. Now, we wouldn't ever send you someplace that's not safe.
Sure. Right.
But at the same time, you may have to make a decision that this is the investment that I'm making. And we try to prepare any barber that's in network with us what the situation is, so they're not completely, you know, you're not just walking into a situation where I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So, because I think about one barber we paired one of our families up north in Chicago here with, and so they drive to the south side. I mean, it's in Bronzeville, so it's a nice area.
Yeah. I used to live in Bridgeport.
Okay, well, you know exactly. Yeah. And it's really, you know, they're building it up and everything. And so, but the barber, he's like, oh yeah, they come in and, you know, and he's so laid back. So it's a great environment. It's a great experience for all of them.
Yeah.
But it's important that you make the decision that I may have to sacrifice.
Right.
And that's okay. Like I said, we have someone who's driving from Iowa.
Yeah.
Because there's just no African-American salons where they live, you know, so, which is a over 3 hour drive, you know, in a day. So, and that's the sacrifice that she's willing to make. So what I'm saying is that when we refer you to a place, just be open because it may require a sacrifice of time, investment, money, or a sacrifice of placing yourself in an environment that may not be comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good word, but it is the sacrificial love. I mean, Jesus, right?
Exactly.
Do we need to go any further?
Yes, absolutely.
But I think people don't understand the importance.
Mm-hmm.
People just don't get it sometimes, you know? And unless you've been really taught and like, you know, had that moment where you're like, uh-oh, I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard, you know, to teach people those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we love our families and everything that we're saying today here. I just hope everyone understands we're saying it in love because we love you, you know, and we love your kids and we want what's best for them, you know, and we want what's best for you, you know. And so anything that we say out of love, you know, it might be hard, you know, to say teach your kids about African-American history. Yeah. That's important. I had brought up Tyler Perry or something when I found it, and they were looking like, who is that? And
so,
you know. Yeah.
So back in the day when we lived in the city, we went to Tyler Perry, Medea Goes to Jail at McCormick Place. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. That was one of the most fun nights of my life.
I know.
And there were like four white people there. Yeah. And that's the thing about the African-American community. Mm-hmm. I've never felt more accepted.
Yes. Than when
I'm around the African-American community.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You might get those looks once in a while, but after that, they're just like, they're fine. Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, they like it too.
So absolutely. We used to work with this ministry that helped drive kids to go see their parents in jail or prison or whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
That's so good.
And so the woman who ran this ministry was incredible, but like she would host fundraisers. And so we would, my wife and I would be part of like the fashion show, you know, they do the fashion show with the fur coats and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, we just got to, it was just such a incredible experience. Like just, I don't know. We were at tables with people we didn't know and we just like accepted. And
exactly.
It was like, yeah.
Yes. And you know what? That needs to exist more in it, which is why we want to bridge the gap. That's important, you know, for African-American families to try to understand the dynamics of a transracial adopted family.
Right.
Or biracial families that are just, you know, again, some really struggling and they need the support. So why would you, you know, not understand? Like, so we want to try to help with the understanding part of it.
Mm-hmm. It really is so complicated. Mm-hmm. And there are so many emotions on both sides. Mm-hmm. And I definitely appreciate y'all being willing to step into that gap though. And you know, and, so it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're excited about where it's going to lead.
I love it. So let's talk, what are the dreams? Like, what is the...
There are lots of dreams. One of the dreams is that we want to expand, again, beyond the borders of Illinois. The other dream is that something that I envision, even as the years go on, is some of the families or kids that we've helped along the way will begin to be a part of the organization.
Mm. Yeah.
I really see that happening. I see, because obviously this has to continue on beyond us. And so I see those kids actively coming back, you know, and reaching out to some of the kids who were underneath them. I think about one of the young ladies that I started doing her hair when she was two, and now she's like getting ready to go to high school almost. I'm like, wow, that went fast. But even just like her desire is like, well, you know, I really want to learn how to do hair, you know,
awesome.
it is. And to encourage her that and support her in that and her wanting to be a part of some of the other kids' lives here, you know, or even some of the kids that we've helped to live in the group homes, you know, who are now in foster families, that they would reach back, you know, and come back and help and be a part of the mission. So I really see that as being something that is going to materialize at some point.
That's cool. Yeah. I love that. I love seeing all your stuff and the Windy City Live stuff. And it's
crazy. Yeah, that was cool. Fun.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a legitimate, I don't know if it's a fear, but a legitimate concern maybe that like you could just completely blow up and get out of control, right? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're excited about the opportunity to help more people and to raise the awareness that we need support. Right. You know, again, because we can't be here without people supporting us.
Yeah.
And so it's important that we begin to create that community within, and getting the location is just one part of that.
Right.
So that people can put physical eyes on something. Cause sometimes it's hard when you're just talking about a concept that's floating.
Yeah. Sure.
And so it kind of puts a physical concept on the fact that, okay, this is a real place that's doing real work that needs help.
Yeah.
You know, right. We can't expand this vision that we have without resources. And so we're excited about even the opportunity for corporate partnerships or partnerships with other church organizations or conferences or whoever. We're going to be participating in the CAFA conference. That's
I think we'll be there with Replanted.
Exciting. And just getting the word out there, you know, that we're here to go.
Mm-hmm. When y'all are back at Refresh this year too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. You know, we have that on the calendar.
I'm excited.
I am too. So, yeah. And you know, we did, we usually always do a hair workshop as part of that. So if there are people out there who are going to be attending, please come to the workshop. Yeah. And we do it on hair. Well, this past year we did it on hair and skin.
Okay.
So if you're struggling or you want to know more, or you know other people that need the help, invite them to the Refresh Conference, you know, so they can get that information.
There you go. I love it. I
good
love
plug
it.
There good for stuff.
I love it. Good work.
Yes.
One interesting thing is we've had just seen from the different families is them trying to separate from their child once they get, you know, they start the process of getting their hair. So, you know, we've seen a few families just, I won't say hover, but just kind of be too engrossed into it. So if a child is crying and, you know, it's just like, they want to rush right in. Right, so it's like, oh, no, it's like, I'm protecting them. It's like, they're fine.
Yeah.
You know, this is just one of the first step processes of, you know, getting their hair done.
Right.
Because, yes, you're going to have some kids who are tender-headed, who basically, like I said, as soon as the comb hits their hair, it's like, ah.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
They want to
right.
be screaming and stuff like that. But, yeah, just seeing those and, you know, just coming from our perspective of it, you know, when African kids do that, we're just like, all right, be quiet, you know. you're getting your hair done.
Exactly.
It's not going to hurt. It's not hurting that much.
Right.
But, you know, just seeing, you know, the Caucasians do that, it's just like, you got to learn just to let go and just, you know, let them go through their process. Because eventually, you know, years later, you know, it'll become natural to them.
It goes natural
to them.
Yeah.
We do understand also that some kids have sensory issues. And so that is a real thing that we are dealing with. And in that case, we're sensitive to that.
Right.
But we feel like the only way to help them move through that process, because again, we're going back to life skills.
Yeah.
They're not going to be an adult, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Hollering, you know, literally in some cases, because they're getting their hair done.
Right.
So the way to help them through that process at some point is to try to detach yourself from the situation and let the stylist work with that child.
Right.
Because then we can start to develop a relationship that helps them to understand, okay, well, this is part of getting your hair done. And if it's hurting, then, you know, you let us know and then you'll be more sensitive, you know? So like helping them work through their process on their own without being so attached. Mm. And we understand that some kids have issues with that. And again, we're sensitive to that.
Yeah.
But we want to work with you for your own specific situation.
Yeah.
You know, like there are some families that they're in a situation where we still have to go to the home because they're not ready to handle a salon environment. Okay.
Right.
So we're sensitive to that. Okay.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that that's not always going to be okay. So we want to make sure we're moving them along the process.
Right.
You know, even in regards to getting their hair done. So that's one advantage I think that we have here, because I think a lot of salon owners and people that do hair don't understand that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
right.
So that's one thing that we offer. I feel like that a lot of places don't.
Cause there's that trauma piece to all this stuff in the background. Right. Yeah. We didn't even talk about that whole other part of this.
Yes, exactly. So, but some of the parents are just overly attentive.
Sure.
Okay. So we just need to ask you to go to the next room and sit down or find something to do. We have one mom. It's so funny. Every time we would go to her house, she's like, well, I'm going to wash clothes. You know, because I already know she's going to cry more if I'm here.
Right.
You know, but if I give her the opportunity to have that private time, then she learns how to deal with, you know, the pain and everything on her own.
Right.
And it's amazing how when that happens, you see, we had one young lady we were working with for over a year, and now she sits and it's no problem.
Right.
You know, so it's just a matter of getting used to it in some cases.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move into the final two questions that I have for you.
Okay.
Does that work? So my first question is, what is the strangest job that y'all have had? So, you know, either one of you, what's the strangest job you've had?
Jobs that I've had. The most interesting job that I've had is I was a parole agent for the state of Illinois.
You were a parole? Were you really a PO?
Yes, I was.
Oh, wow. You've lived some life.
Oh, my goodness.
Man. Wow.
As a matter of fact, on the west side of Chicago.
Yeah.
So,
Okay.
The most interesting and the most challenging, even more so than hair,
job
that I've ever had. And it wasn't for me. You know, I did it for as long as I could, and then I went back to doing hair.
Yeah. Wow.
No, I'll say the interesting job that I had was I went to Oral Roberts University.
Oh, did you? Down in Tulsa?
Mm-hmm,
Tulsa. Nice. Okay. Yeah.
So I worked for our, actually kind of worked under Oral Roberts. I mean, not Oral Roberts, sorry, Richard Roberts at the time when he was president.
Oh, wow.
So we would sometimes, when we weren't supposed to, be doing side jobs for them, like getting them furniture and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. I mean, we were doing, you know, stuff around the campus, yeah. you know, moving furniture and things like that.
But yeah.
on special occasions, yes, we would do work for him.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I'm from Amarillo, Texas. So it's about 6 hours from Tulsa,
oh,
right
I know
there.
Where that
yeah.
Is.
So
yeah.
Yeah. That's my neck of the woods down there. So it's good. Okay, cool. So my final question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom of God more into their work?
Into their work.
Yeah. I don't know if you have collective or if you want to go individually. I'm down for whatever.
Okay. Don't shy away from what you're passionate about, because, you know, the community that we serve, there's many different people from many different backgrounds, but I don't shy away from who I am because I'm going to be who I am, whether I'm at work or at home.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's been situations where, you know, I pray with people. That's just what I do.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I'm not going to limit that based upon work, you sure. know, so. So I think that's the biggest way that you can bring the kingdom of God to whatever workplace that you're in. Don't, whatever conversation you have at church is the same conversation I have at work.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll attest to that too. It's, never conform yourself to, you know, your surroundings.
Yeah.
As I said, I work in an environment where I do know someone who is a believer. But everybody else isn't. And, you know, when I started there, you know, I told them getting the job, that was a blessing. And I've talked to them about scriptures and things like that. And they've listened to, but, you know, they do their own thing. But, you know, yeah, just not rolling with a crowd, I'll say
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You know, just be your own individual.
Yeah.
Because that way you'll either show them, you know, the true person that you are, or just like, you know, if you try to do what they do, then like, okay, well, didn't you tell me you were this? And then they're going to start. It's
right.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know if you're really, really that, or you're someone else, you yeah. know? So, but yeah, just stay true to yourself.
I think
yes.
that, yeah. I think
that's right. And nice. Part of that is bringing that thirst. People can't be thirsty if you're not presenting seeds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, and then when they inquire about the well to come to, it's Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the solution for
that's
you.
That's right. Jesus. Yeah.
I love it.
That's it.
I love it. Well, thanks, y'all, for making
yeah,
time.
You.
I know it takes time.
Yeah.
I appreciate y'all making time.
It's been a blessing.
Yeah, this is great.
Thank
good.
You.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yes.
So,
thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Tamika and Ryan. They are just such great people. Didn't I tell you you were going to love hearing from them? I just want to say, if you want resources about anything we talked about today, feel free to reach out to either myself or Styles for Kids. I'm sure they'd be happy to help you. I could help you talk through some of this stuff. If you have questions about adoption, foster care, anything that we talked about, it is my life's joy, and I am so burdened for that community, and I would love to chat about that sort of stuff. So hit me up. I'd love to chat. Yeah, be sure and check out all of Styles for Kids stuff. They are blowing up right now for a good reason, because the work that they do is important. I know I haven't said that once this whole interview, but I really do feel that way. I feel like they're stepping in a very needed place, and it's beautiful work. And I love hearing about the hustle, right? You saw Tamika's story go from, you know, just learning how to braid hair to like having this burden for kids who just need permanency, who need a home to love them. It's just, man, I love how God does that. It's so such good stuff. So yeah, make sure if you haven't rated and reviewed, now is a good time, because, you know, now you're bored with no more Theology of Hustle to listen to. You can go ahead and do that now. And until next time, get out there and hustle.